Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Nobody likes to pay taxes, and certainly no one enjoys the drudgery of preparing their tax returns or even the chore of assembling the materials to hand over to someone else to prepare those taxes. But it is a fact of modern life. No matter what you think about the government, no matter which side of the political aisle you identify with, taxes fund the government. And at a time when the federal deficit is so large as to be unfathomable, the money to reduce the debt comes, in part, from taxes. So collecting them is not optional. To that end, the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act helped the Internal Revenue Service recover more than $1 billion in unpaid taxes, while also increasing staff, which allowed customer wait times to decline and made technical advances that simplify tax filings for some people. Well, now that's in jeopardy, as the Trump administration runs rampant through the federal government, firing employees, even closing some agencies, and they have their sights now set on the Internal Revenue Service. Okay, but what might this mean for you? Will you be able to get the help on the phone that you need or online to answer questions you may have as you fill out your 1040s this year or next? Will your refund come to you on time or will it be delayed? What else should you know as you fill out those 2024 tax forms and keep track of things for next year? We're going to look into all of that this hour with Laura Kelly. She is associate editor at The Atlantic and the author of The Atlantic Daily Newsletter, which recently focused on the goings-on at the IRS. Also with us is Mike Kircher, the deputy director of the Tax Law Center at NYU Law, and Vaishali Shah, a lecturer in finance at Elon University and founder of Copperseed, a financial coaching firm, and she coaches her students in how to file and deal with taxes as well. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome. It's radio. You have to talk. So, Laura, I'm going to talk to you first. A lot of Americans are scratching their heads trying to figure out what exactly is being accomplished by Donald Trump and Elon Musk and their DOGE efforts to wipe out waste and find fraud and stop abuse where it may exist, because the logical approach would be analytical, surgical, and instead they are simply running roughshod over the government and firing people wholesale, in some cases rehiring them because they were too hasty. But in essence, what they appear to be doing is attempting to follow conservative Grover Norquist's great desire to shrink government so that it's so small it can be drowned in the bathtub. Now they're turning their attention to the IRS with plans to lay off as many as 7,000 employees at tax time. Has that happened yet? Have those employees been fired yet?
Thanks so much, Mike. So I think if any listeners are confused about what's going on with these firings, you are not alone. It is extremely confusing, and a lot is actually pretty up in the air right now. So last month, the Trump administration announced that it would order the IRS to start firing as many as 7,000 employees, as you said, Mike, in the middle of tax season. And this included 5,000 people that work on collection and enforcement. So those cuts alone would have made up about 7% of the total IRS workforce. So this is now all a bit up in the air because last week two judges ruled that the firings of probationary government employees needed to be temporarily blocked. So there's been a lot of confusion since then. It's sort of unclear what happens now. Some employees are reportedly being told that they are being brought back, but they're placed on leave. And so sort of a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
In addition to all of this, The Washington Post reported this week that more than 20% of the IRS's taxpayer help branch is going to be cut, and some are taking deferred resignations. And so what this all boils down to, according to the Post's reporting this week, is that by May 15th, so after the taxpayer filing deadline, about 18% of the IRS, the workforce that was at the IRS at the start of the year, may not be there. So more than 100,000 people worked there at the start of the year. And by mid-May, there may be closer to 84,000 people working at the IRS.
So, Michael, prior to your job at the NYU Tax Law Center, you worked for the House Ways and Means Committee's majority tax staff designing advanced tax policy. And for several years, you were an employee of the Office of Associate Chief Counsel at the Internal Revenue Service. You've been inside the agency. And so far, we're talking about 7,000 probationary employees who have been a part of this reduction in force that may or may not come or go, depending upon what happens with courts. Another 4,700 have accepted the government's deferred resignation offer. But as Laura just said, the IRS employs 100,000 people. So will these cuts even be noticed?
They absolutely will, for a couple of reasons. I think the first thing to keep in mind is we're in the very early phases of the ultimate and complete plan, right? We're talking about 7,000 probationary employees who've already been fired and now are being brought back. You've got the folks who left under the fork and accepted that deferred resignation. That's a second bucket. There are other people who are leaving without taking the fork. Those are often some of your highest capacity folks with the best institutional knowledge who know how the agency runs, know how to solve problems, know how to tackle big issues at the most senior levels of the IRS. You see every day, it feels like, some 30, 40, 50 year person who knows the agency and the system inside and out, just hanging it up, calling it quits. That has huge impacts on the system. Further, the acting commissioner says she doesn't have a sort of an answer as to what the longer term plans are, but the sort of the market expectation is about a 50% cut in the agency by the end of the year. And President Trump has said time and again that his long-term plan is to shift to a world of the External Revenue Service and fund the government largely by tariffs. The nominated commissioner, Billy Long, when he was in Congress, he sponsored a bill that would terminate the IRS and move away from a progressive income tax to a sales tax that would sort of raise a lot more money from working families.
A value-added tax like they have in Europe.
A consumption tax, kind of like a sales tax that we have in the States.
I'm going to come back to all of that, particularly the part that you talked about with regard to tariffs, because that's the top of everybody's mind. But Laura, you are my financial guru here. This is what you teach at Elon. If the United States believes that it must get a handle on our multi-trillion dollar debt, and they also want to cut taxes for the rich or maintain the tax cuts that they've already put in for the rich and for corporations, isn't it imperative that they collect the taxes that are owed as efficiently and expediently as possible? I mean, will it be possible to do that with these force reductions?
I think it's going to be harder. It's interesting that Laura was saying that the staff at the IRS was about $100,000 at the 100,000 people at the beginning of this year. I was looking at the IRS's 2023 data book. And in 2023, the IRS processed 271.5 million tax returns and other forms and assisted 60.3 million taxpayers in person and also over the phone. So with a staff of 100,000, they're doing a lot. And as of April 23, the nation had about $7 trillion of uncollected tax revenue. So there's a lot of money still to be collected, and that has improved since the Inflation Reduction Act. But yeah, I agree, Mike. There's, it's hard to keep the government running if you're not collecting the tax revenues.
You know, Michael, you worked inside the agency, so I'm going to ask you this question. 100,000 people sounds like an enormous number of people to work for a federal agency. It sounds like an enormous number of people to work for the federal government, period. But explain to me what they do, these 100,000 people. How much of this is dependent on human beings and how much of it is simply in the computers?
That's a great question, right? And I think backing up a little bit, we should absolutely take the opportunity to figure out how to build the IRS better, because one way or another, it's going to be completely different in the coming years than it was previously. So to give you a sense of what those people do, it's a huge mix of functions, right? Like you say 100,000 people is a lot of people. This is an agency that brings in $5 trillion a year. And that's a lot of work. And every single taxpayer interacts with this agency, right? That's 160 million returns last year. So it's actually like very efficient. Many of the staff answer the phones, right? Individuals like you and me, we have some problem on our return. You call, they answer. That's one function they have. Another function they have is they have to write a lot of the rules of the road, right? Like where I work, the Office of Chief Counsel sort of would implement a lot of laws, right? Congress passes a law, but Congress passes like what almost feel like blueprints often. They're kind of like ideas, and leave a lot of the details to Chief Counsel's office, for example. They have to create all the forms, they have to maintain systems, they have HR functions, but the core functions, I think, are service collections and writing the rules of the road, and that just takes a lot of people.
And how does the $5 trillion or whatever you said it was compare to the debt, the deficit, the debt? I guess they're two different things, but how does it compare? In other words, what we bring in, how does it compare to what we need to bring in to solve that?
Well, I mean, we have significant deficits right now, and that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. When you look at what the impact of like the expected cuts are, like you can look at some analysis that, for example, Yale has done on what the costs would be to the deficits of the proposed cuts, the sort of the 25% cuts that you and Laura were going back and forth on before. That's going to add, I think, like $2 or $3 trillion of deficits, depending on behavioral impacts. And if you cut more, it's going to be a lot more, just because you're going to collect less of what you are actually owed. It's not going to change the rules for anybody. It's just going to mean you collect less of what you're owed. And that's not going to be from people who like just work jobs and get W-2s. Like tax compliance for those folks is basically 100% because you have third-party reporting, you have withholding, everything is kind of automatic. It's really for people who don't get that level of reporting, and that's largely like businesses. So you're just going to see a huge increase in the deficit and putting more pressure on that.
We're talking taxes this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Vishali, I know you want to jump in here.
You were mentioning the 100,000, and if that, is a significant number of people working at a department like the IRS. I just want to say that was the level of employment in 2010. So in 2010 we had 100,000 people working at the IRS, and our population has grown since then. Our tax code has become more complicated, and we're working with the same level. And just a couple of years ago, we had even fewer. So, we had started making some progress there in the last couple of years, and it seems like this is being reversed now.
Laura, I want to go back to something that Michael alluded to a moment ago, because he worked inside the agency, that a lot of the people that are laying off, they're laying off, not the ones that they're, not the probationary employees, but the people who have taken these buyouts, essentially, to go away, early retirement, essentially, are taking with them a vast amount of institutional knowledge. It's not just how the tax code works. Some of these people are the only people that understand how the computers are programmed, because God knows the government computers are operating on code that was written 40, 50 years ago in some cases. What are the implications of that brain drain?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one thing that I will just flag is that already a lot of the IRS's employees were close to retirement age. So before 2022, when this influx of IRA funding came in that we've been talking about, more than 60% of the IRS's employees were 6 years or fewer from retirement. So already this was a workforce that was going to be leaving the agency soon. And so in the past few years, a lot of new people, and that's actually a lot of those people are probationary employees who have been cut in recent months. A lot of new people were coming in, and so there was a new generation starting, and now we may see even more people leaving the agency.
We have to take a break. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking taxes and layoffs at the IRS and what it will all mean as the downsizing of the government continues, particularly what it will all mean During this tax filing time, Laura Kelly is with us. She's associate editor at The Atlantic and author of the Atlantic Daily Newsletter. Vaishali Shah teaches finance at Elon University, and she's the founder of Copperseed, which is a financial advisory organization. And Michael Kircher is deputy director of the Tax Law Center at NYU Law. Michael, you said you think it's worth mentioning that a lot of the probationary workers I'm reading the wrong comment here. You said that the 100,000 people who work at the IRS is comparable to the number of employees at the Gap. Is that right? So I've been to the Gap many times, and you never see an employee. You never see one there. I don't know how many stores they have, but if that's indicative of the vast hallways of the IRS and not running into people, it scares me a little bit. You told Time magazine that there are a lot of questions about whether they retained the right people among these layoffs, the ones who can quickly solve technical issues should they arrive during this tax season. So it isn't just what individual taxpayers may face as a result. There could be internal issues, correct, that require expertise that may not be there anymore?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of that all flows through to individual returns, right? Like if there's some quirk or hiccup in tax filing season that needs to be fixed, if you don't have those veterans who understand how to fix problems quickly, that's when you can run into problems, because a lot of the stuff that relates to filing season was pre-baked months ago, like before the beginning of the year. They've got to develop their forms, share information with Intuit and other tax service providers, and get everything set. So now, like normally, like at this point, they're in kind of maintenance and sort of ongoing filing season mode, and it's only problems that they have to respond to. But going forward for like next filing season, it's going to be a lot harder for them to get filing season ready in time, and it's going to be a lot harder to implement any changes that Congress might make in the law, which is really likely at the end of this year. So I worry about whether we see a bad filing season next year or the year after. I've never seen a bad tax filing season, and no one wants to see that.
Right. Now, Vaishali, it takes a lot of money to recruit, hire and train employees in any endeavor. And this is happening not just at the IRS, these layoffs and cutbacks. It's happening government-wide under the direction of Donald Trump, whose own businesses have declared bankruptcies over the years. And I'm just curious what this path demonstrates, because some experts have said that shedding these people is like throwing money away. Is it, or is it carving out the bloat?
Well, I think that we have a lot of institutional knowledge within our government, and it takes years and years in order to develop that knowledge. So cutting it out so suddenly, it creates a huge gap. Not having that knowledge immediately and not having the time to, cross train and bring people on board and give them the time to learn all of this. I think it's,
most Americans are wage earners, and they have their tax obligation deducted directly from their paychecks. They never see that money, but we still have to go through this exercise of filing a 1040 or a 1040 EZ form, even though the government already knows what we made and they already know that we paid the taxes, which just seems like an exercise in silliness. But one critic of what is happening right now in Washington, Nina Olson, who was the IRS's in-house taxpayer advocate, says that what's going on now, there is no strategy except to weaken the IRS and replace it with apps. Well, is that a bad thing? Couldn't most people do their taxes on an app?
I think the distinction between individuals who are W-2 wage earners, right, going out and earning their income through employment, can have taxes that are very simple. I think that for the majority of people who are small business owners, taxes are much more complicated. So you're, collecting your income, you have to keep track of your expenses. The government doesn't have this information, so it's up to us to put that together and report it to the IRS. With the increase of side hustles and the number of people who are doing Uber driving and all kinds of other side hustle type activities, we have more and more people who are earning income and also need to keep track of those expenses so they can get those deductions so that they're not paying too much in taxes. So, depending on your income structure and situation, it could be very easy, but I think increasingly it's becoming more complex.
Michael.
Yeah, so we were talking earlier about like historical trends and how the IRS was totally gutted over a longer term period of time by Republicans from about 2010 to about 2020. They got a big influx in cash a couple of years ago, and they thought about how to solve some of these problems, right? Why do I have to go to Intuit and pay $80 for TurboTax, input my own information, do all that stuff? So they started a program, this direct file program, that does allow you to file directly with the IRS and inputs a lot of that data. And over time, I think the goal was for that to be far more automated, far more automatic for the vast majority of people. Make it easy, make it simple, make it free.
And Laura, that direct file system, which I was going to talk about later, we can talk a little bit about it now. That's only available in 25 of the 50 states. North and South Carolina are two of the 25 states. Why? I know I guess it's a pilot program. Is that what it is?
That's a great question. I'm actually not sure. Do others
Okay.
know?
Anybody else know why? Okay. In your reporting about this, because nobody likes the IRS, nobody likes to pay taxes. It's a thing we have to do. So, in your report, and there are people who want to cut this agency out and take a different approach to taxes, Donald Trump among them. But in your reporting, Laura, have you heard anybody say that these layoffs and these other cuts at the IRS might lead to changes for the better? And if so, what are they saying?
That's a great question. I think it's a great thing to flag, as we have a couple times, that the IRS is not one of the most beloved agencies. In fact, some Pew polling from last year that surveyed a lot of Americans about their attitudes toward different federal agencies found that the IRS was in dead last of the 16 agencies. So it's absolutely fair to say that this is not a beloved agency. I will note, though, and this may come as a surprise to people given the IRS's reputation, but in recent years, the IRS had been making some positive changes with all of this IRA funding. So, for example, customer service wait times were down. I know that's a huge frustration for sort of the average American if you're having an issue with your tax return and you want to get help from someone and it takes forever to hear back from them. Tech initiatives, so Direct File, was helping make filing more efficient. And in addition to that, the agency's audits were recovering more in funding. So I think to your question, Mike, it's a really good one. And I think in general, there is a tendency to conflate cost cutting with efficiency. But one thing that some experts I interviewed noted to me, sort of related to what we have all been talking about, is that sometimes cuts may also lead to institutional knowledge being lost and processes becoming
Well,
less efficient.
if the impetus for this and all of these cuts in all of these agencies is to root out fraud, waste, and abuse, it would seem to me that you can root out some waste by cutting personnel and things like that. But you are likely to increase fraud because you won't have the personnel to find the taxpayer fraud in this. Do we know of any instances of abuse that will be solved because of these cutbacks at the IRS? Laura.
I'm actually not sure on that one.
Okay. Michael, the Wall Street Journal reports that Charles Rettig, who's a California tax lawyer who was picked, I believe, by Donald Trump to lead the IRS in the last administration, argued this month that the agency was outgunned against wealthy taxpayers and that expanding, not contracting, enforcement would more than pay for itself. He added, quote, "A disabled, underfunded IRS significantly benefits unidentified, non-compliant taxpayers at the direct expense of compliant taxpayers, which means most of us." So what should we take from this?
Well, the first thing is, it's not just Commissioner Rettig. It's seven former commissioners from both parties have all gotten together and said basically the exact same thing. This is like a reckless and harmful way to approach this problem with respect to the IRS. It's going to significantly reduce the ability for the IRS to offer taxpayers the services they need to file timely on time, to get their refunds on time. Most returns result in refunds, and it's going to balloon the deficits, primarily by like making it easier for sort of really large businesses to pay less of what they owe. And that ultimately over time means more shifting of the tax burden from rich people, really big corporations, to working Americans in one way or another, right? And we've seen this before. Like, we used to audit corporations back before like the 2010s on a more regular basis, like big ones. And then as the IRS got cut, like, it made it much, much harder to do the complex investigations that Commissioner Rettig is talking about. And so they stopped doing the really big complex cases. Vishali and I were going back and forth in the chat a little bit ago about how they basically stopped auditing partnerships altogether, like just stopped, because they just couldn't do it. And instead, they focused on audits of like working families, because you can do those basically automated with letters and without people. And that's what I would tend to expect to see more of that. You go back to auditing a higher percentage of families over as compared to like businesses and really big businesses with complex cases.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because that will the need to shift the way and who they audit will impact a lot more people than we think. Vishali, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to add to what Michael was saying because many of the probationary employees that were recently fired, that were hired in 2024, were specifically hired to fill a gap that Michael just stated. The ability to review the very complex tax returns of large partnerships and organizations. And a lot of those cases are being dropped because the manpower is not there. In addition to that, the IRS in 2023, because of the Inflation Reduction Act, was increasing a lot of efficiencies. They started using AI, for example, to do some of the initial searching and determining which of these larger organizations should be reviewed more closely, because it takes a lot of manpower to go through those tax returns, but AI can do that more efficiently and flag the ones that should have further review. So a lot of that is in peril with these recent cuts of probationary employees.
Laura, in The Atlantic, you report that there was a shift in focus at the IRS during the Biden administration. They began prioritizing the auditing of wealthy people and corporations. And prior to that, they were targeting taxpayers whose incomes were less than $75,000 because those audits are simpler and they can be automated. Audits of the wealthy, audits of corporations are incredibly complex and it requires people power. Does that explain the downsizing so that these wealthy individuals and corporations cannot be audited effectively?
It's a great question. And yeah, that's absolutely right. So the IRS in the past couple of years had shifted its focus explicitly to looking into wealthy people and wealthy corporations. So in May, the former IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel announced that the agency would really drastically ramp up its audits of corporations and people making over 10 million. So the taxes that rich people evade every year amount to $150 billion, Werfel told CNBC last year. And investigating that could have real potential upside. A 2023 paper estimated that every dollar the agency spends on audits of wealthy people could translate to $12 in recovered funds.
So,
And one thing, sorry, go ahead.
go ahead. One thing.
Oh, I was just going to say that one thing that some experts I spoke with in my reporting flagged is that this type of investigation can have a real deterrent capacity. So if people see their friends or peer organizations getting audited, they may be sort of deterred from trying to evade their own taxes.
So, if you've run a campaign where you're going to help the working people of America, and you cut the IRS to the point where they can no longer audit wealthy and people and corporations, but they can and will audit middle class people, where's the upside for those middle class people? Laura?
It's a great question. I think that, I actually don't know on that one. I'm curious what others' thoughts on that are.
We're talking taxes on Charlotte Talks on WFAE this morning. Vishali, is there an upside? If more people, if you need to audit, well, do you need to audit? I mean, maybe they just won't audit anybody. Could that be the case going forward?
I mean, possibly. I don't see an upside, honestly. Yeah, I don't see one. So
when it has come to cutbacks at other agencies, the courts have stepped in and they've told the administration to rehire the fired workers. It remains to be seen whether that will happen. In the case of USAID, AAID, a judge ruled that the firing of these employees and the shuttering of the agency was unconstitutional. But the courts have no enforcement powers. So do we anticipate similar rulings being handed down, Laura, with regard to the IRS?
Yeah, so I think that the ruling from two judges last week that ordered basically a pause on the firing of probationary workers will likely affect Treasury employees. So that means that it will affect IRS employees. As I said earlier, it's still sort of unclear what's going on with people. Some fired IRS workers who are probationary are reportedly getting called back in and being told they're being placed on administrative leave. But I think there's still a lot that's really quite up in the air as a lot of these cuts sort of work their way through the courts.
So I have about 90 seconds left in this segment. Laura, you have written about what a well-funded, well-resourced IRS can do for the nation versus what an underfunded IRS can do. What are the differences?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think that sort of according to experts I spoke with, in a perfect world, a really well-resourced IRS would be bringing in revenue that supports America's programs. And it would, as we've been discussing, be able to really go after people who are looking to evade their taxes. And overall, this could lead to a tax system that's more fair, that makes sort of the average W-2 employee who's paying their taxes feel that they're operating within a system that is fair and that is serving everyone equally.
But will it lead to that? What do we think? Because if we're talking about a fundamental... What will it do to America? If you can't collect the taxes and you can't pay the debt, what will it do to the country? Nobody. Okay. I think it's self-evident, perhaps. We're going to come back and talk more about what this means to the individual taxpayer, particularly now at tax time, with Vishali Shah, lecturer in finance at Elon University, Michael Kircher is deputy director for the Tax Law Center at NYU Law, and Laura Kelly is an associate editor at The Atlantic and author of the Atlantic Daily Newsletter. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're looking into taxes and the cutbacks at the IRS and what it will mean for the country, for you, as we prepare to file our taxes this tax season. Laura Kelly is with us. She's associate editor of The Atlantic. Michael Kircher is deputy director of the Tax Law Center at NYU Law. And Vishali Shah is a lecturer in finance at Elon University, founder of Copperseed, which is a financial coaching firm. Vishali, this is happening. All these cutbacks are happening at tax time, when many people, both ordinary Americans trying to do their taxes, their own taxes, as well as CPAs who have complicated questions that need to be answered by people at the IRS, have occasional need to contact officials there and get those questions answered so they can file accurate taxes. How important is that aspect of what the IRS does, and what impact might this have in terms of staff reductions on ability to file this year and then again next year?
Yeah, So in terms of how important that is, it's incredibly important because our tax code is very complicated. So, everyday Americans, CPAs, we all have lots of questions. And, I've called the IRS in the past. I find that the folks who answer the phone are very helpful and, you know, it's a really important resource that we have. As far as what impact the tax cuts will have, I will say that the, you know, in the last couple of years, the IRS has reduced its wait time for call-ins to about 3 minutes per caller, which
Wow.
is incredible considering
Yes.
that we have, you know, like we said, only 100,000 people working at the IRS and not all of them answering tax-related questions. So, yeah, I think that the, you know, it, depending on the timing of when, you know, further layoffs happen, that'll determine what it looks like over the next few weeks before April 15th.
Unless you're a complete genius and infallible, which no one is, every change that you make, particularly in an organization that is complex as the IRS, there are going to be unforeseen problems. Could the consequences that are going to hit us, whether foreseen or not, mostly affect taxpayers with slightly more complicated returns? Should those taxpayers consider having a professional do them this year? Or might professionals also be thrown by all of this, Vaishali?
Well, I think that the, you know, reduction in staff, which will eventually affect wait times, will affect all of us, whether you're a professional or an individual tax filer. So, yeah, no, I think that that is definitely going to affect all of us.
There,
as far as who should, I'm sorry to interrupt, no. As far as who should... who should hire a professional tax preparer? Like I said, I think if you have, a, you know, just income, W-2 income coming in, your tax return is fairly simple. I think it's, you know, it's easy to do it on your own. But once we start bringing in passive income or, you know, other sources of like side hustles, as I mentioned before, I think it does become a little bit more complicated.
So there are some people who believe that Trump's approach to cutting the fat with massive layoffs of personnel is purposeful so that people who already regard the government with suspicion will come to believe that the government simply does not work and it needs to be roughed up, even destroyed, which increases the power of the executive branch. Laura, in your reporting or those of others at The Atlantic who talk about, write about many things other than just the IRS, is that being spoken about? From what you've learned, is the reason for this and other cuts likely something unspoken?
I think that it's a great question. And one thing I will say is that I think that the agency, the IRS, has a really long history of being politicized. This is certainly not the agency's first rodeo in terms of being a target of political attacks. This goes back for decades. If you want to sort of have a sense of what a diminished IRS would look like, you can just look back to the 2010s. So by 2017, the agency's workforce had already shrunk a lot from 2010. Its audit rate was 42% lower than it had been in 2010. And in that period, a lot of Americans were not having a great experience with the IRS. There were slower refunds. There were delayed call times when people called in with customer service questions. And so I think that that period was what one expert referred to me as the doom loop. So the agency was being politicized and vilified. So it was seeing budget cuts from Congress, and then it wasn't working as well. And so then it was further vilified. And so I think this is something that we've seen before. And certainly the agency has been the subject of political attacks in the past. And it's truly under attack now as well.
Michael, Laura reports that Donald Trump's pick to replace the IRS's outgoing acting commissioner, Billy Long, once backed legislation to abolish the IRS. Is that still his goal? Do you think it is Trump's goal to do so?
I don't know the motivations of nominee Long. He just hasn't spoken to it, but it's definitely a bill he sponsored when he was in Congress. President Trump has said pretty clearly he would like to move towards a world of an external revenue service funded by tariffs, like hearkening back to the 1800s. Like that is what he has said time and again.
Let's go back to the 1800s. He loves tariffs. So did presidents in the 1800s. It was the golden era of what they used to call the rich people back then. I can't remember. But anyway, it was a golden time for rich people. And he wants to go back to this. But the government and the size of this country and what this country does here in this country and around the world is exponentially larger than it was in the 1800s. Can you fund the military, Social Security, Medicare, the government itself, other aspects of what we do including research, and America is on the cutting edge of research, can you fund that with external revenue sources like tariffs alone? Or do you need income taxes or a combination of tariffs and some sort of a sales tax on everything we buy?
You can't deal with tariffs alone. There's just not enough money in it. That's just not possible. So you need taxes, and you probably need an income tax. If you were going to move towards a consumption tax system, one of the reasons that like the Billy Long fair tax idea was very unpopular among many Republicans is because the rate you'd have to apply to fund the government would be incredibly high. You'd be raising prices on every good in the country by like 50% or more.
Well, it's a regressive tax. The what we have now is a progressive tax. So if you make less money, theoretically, you pay less taxes, although we do have these examples now of secretaries of billionaires having to pay more taxes than the billionaires themselves. But that's because of the way the tax code is written and what people pay taxes on, earned income versus unearned income. Michael, the IRS has had time to plan for this tax season prior to these layoffs. But you say that you are worried particularly about next year. Talk about that.
There's a lot of like tax cuts that are expiring at the end of this year. And so Congress is likely to do a very significant tax bill with potentially very significant changes. People have talked about no tax on tips, overtime, Social Security, et cetera. I don't think that they're going to have like answers to what that's going to look like by Memorial Day, by maybe even August. And that puts a really tight time frame for the IRS to be able to like get the filing season ready for next year. We've cut a lot of the top talent. They've either been fired, they will have been fired or left voluntarily. And I'm not so sure they will be well equipped to get it right in time. So filing season will likely be delayed at best if that's where we end up. That means people's refunds are slower. People need those refunds to pay for their stuff.
So as we've mentioned, the government set up a pilot program called Direct File where people can essentially use the IRS to file their taxes electronically and for free in 25 states, among them North and South Carolina. Did it work to the benefit of taxpayers or to the government? Where it was, so far, has it worked to the benefit of either? Laura, do we know?
So I will say on this one, I personally filed my taxes this year using Direct File, and I had a great experience. So that is a sample size of one. But I found it really useful, really easy to file my taxes. I have a full-time job. I'm a W-2 employee. And I received my New York State, which is where I live, I received my New York State tax refund in, I think, a week or two. It was direct deposited to my bank account. And I think that a lot of people and a lot of press coverage I've been reading about this is pretty positive about Direct File. People are finding that it's an efficient tool, and it's sort of an example of the government working as it should with tech.
So why then did Elon Musk say that he had deleted the program? And what did Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent mean when he said during his confirmation hearing that he would study it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the future of this initiative is, as so many things seem to be these days, pretty up in the air. So Elon Musk, who has talked a lot about wanting to improve the government's technological capacities, did say that he had, quote, deleted 18F, which is the government tech program in which this was incubated. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said, as you noted, that Direct File would operate this year, but that it would be, quote, studied for future use. So I can't speak to the motives of these people and why they're saying all this, but it is, sort of ironic that a program that seemed to be sort of working effectively for Americans may end up with a shaky future after these cuts.
You can't, of course, February is behind us, but you can't file your return and get a refund if you're owed one in February. You have to wait because the law makes the government wait to give those refunds out till later in the year. But you report that one expert, Laura, recommended that taxpayers file as quickly as possible this year because of the diminished workforce at the IRS, and it may continue to diminish as the remaining workers look for other jobs to go to, because if your agency's being cut, why wait? Jump ship. Would that advice apply mainly to those who anticipate a refund?
So I think that something that struck me in my reporting for this article is that basically every expert I spoke to said that there's no downside to tax filers filing ASAP. Even in a sort of regular year when there's not so much uncertainty about the IRS, it's never a bad thing to just go ahead and file your taxes early. And as Michael was saying a minute ago, there's a lot of uncertainty too about future years. So even if things sort of go smoothly and sort of continue this year, there is a lot of uncertainty as people potentially continue losing their jobs at the IRS, as people decide that they've become totally demoralized and they want to seek other jobs. There is a lot of uncertainty about how future tax seasons will go. So it seems like a prudent idea to just go ahead and file your taxes if you have to do it anyway.
Vishali, are you advising anyone to do anything substantially different this time around as they prepare and file their returns?
Not substantially different. No, I wouldn't say that.
If you're expecting a refund, some experts say that they might be delayed by this upheaval. Is there a way, Vishali, to track the progress of your return and the progress of when that refund check might be in your bank account?
Yeah, there is actually. So it looks like for electronically filed tax returns, the wait time is about 21 days for them to be processed right now. And if you want to track your refund, you can go to the IRS website and go to the Check My Refund screen. You can Google Check My Refund, and it'll take you to the site as well. You need your Social Security number, your filing status, and the exact refund amount that appeared on the tax return that you submitted. And it'll give you an update. And that website is updated every day.
And if you really want that refund, if you really need that refund, if you're depending on that refund, is it true that you really should file electronically and you should give them a direct deposit number?
Yes, electronic is much faster. The tax returns get processed a lot faster. Refunds appear much faster, and the direct deposit works very well. So I would encourage that.
Taxes in a testy time, our topic today, alliterative on the Charlotte Talks on WFAE. What are some of the common mistakes, Vishali, that people make when they file their taxes that may hold up that refund or may make them file an amended return later on that nobody wants to do? What are some of the common mistakes people make?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The most common mistakes are input errors. So putting in the wrong social security number or mistyping your address, those kinds of things are the most common reasons that refunds are delayed. In addition to that, claiming credits or deductions that you're not eligible for. So just understanding the rules around those is really important. But yeah, input errors is a big reason for delays.
Michael, there are a lot of people who are very concerned that this DOGE force mucking around in all of these agencies, various computer systems, including those at the IRS, raise significant security concerns. And the IRS has all of our information. Does that concern you, or are we blowing this out of proportion?
It is pretty concerning to me. They have every taxpayer's social security number, bank account information, last year AGI name. This is an incredibly rich data set. If you make it easier to hack, which will happen if you further integrate the system with other systems, then it will be like a really attractive target to nefarious actors, to foreign adversaries, et cetera. And so you just got to be really, really careful as a cybersecurity matter if you do any of that stuff, which might be like good ideas, but you got to be careful. And then there are strong legal protections that I'm worried might be ignored and violated. And that is really, really important and concerning. So
Yeah,
very big deal.
I think it bears noting that we need to look at who's doing all of this. Donald Trump, who in his last term refused to release his tax returns to the public, as every president has done in modern times, and Elon Musk, whose business interests have a lot to gain from the inability of the IRS to audit major companies, and the head of the IRS, who says that he wants to abolish the agency. And Trump has fired all of the government's inspectors general and people in the Office of Government Ethics. It's easy to see why many people believe that this screams corruption and malintent. The Congress is not going to do anything about this because the party in control is in the thrall of Trump. The courts might try, but they have no enforcement powers, and Trump appears likely to ignore them if he doesn't like their rulings. This is not the democracy or the country that we have known. But unless all of that I just talked about is unrelated and perhaps bogus, could some of these moves actually work against Donald Trump? Could it turn people against him, Laura?
I think that's a great question. So Trump has certainly been reported to have sought to politicize the IRS over the years. One of his former chief of staff told the New York Times that Trump in his first term spoke of using the IRS to investigate his rivals during his first term. So I think it's certainly fair to be, asking questions about the way that this agency has been and will continue to be politicized.
Good luck to us all at tax time and otherwise. Laura Kelly is associate editor at The Atlantic, author of The Atlantic Daily Newsletter. Mike Kircher is deputy director of the Tax Law Center at NYU Law. And Vaishali Shah is a lecturer in finance at Elon University. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.